Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 414. This is going to be a different kind of episode. I am your host, Thomas Hoven, and today I'm actually doing a project for my fatherhood class, which I've talked about before. And so I'm going to get into the literature and kind of do the actual podcast that is required for my assignment, for the grade. And then after that, I guess I will apply it to my own life when I talk about a little bit and do an ungraded, more of the for my own and your all's entertainment and understanding as well. But first, for the actual graded portion, I decided to investigate interracial parenting and that the effects on fathers as well as children. And this is an important topic because positive racial identity is important. And so an article called Interracial Couples Experiences with Co-parenting School-Age Mixed-Race Children by Margaret Langille as well as some other authors is the overall article I'll be looking at, and I have two other articles that I'm kind of will be weaving in. This article was explaining that having a positive outlook can combat disparities that racialized children exhibit in academic, behavioral, and emotional outcomes. And when we say racialized children, we're referring to really any child of color. So in other words, it being this positive racial identity, it minimizes the negative impacts of racism. And there's a study by a psychologist named Rodriguez that shows correlation between positive racial identity and self-esteem, as well as beliefs about academic abilities. And we know this is important because there's a common understanding that belief in oneself can go a long way. Now, parents, whether they're in an interracial marriage or not, are instrumental in racial socialization, which is the process where parents develop the child within the context of his or her race. This process can be similar to that of monoracial families, but there are also some differences. So it may be more difficult for the child to connect to her racial roots, or there could be disapproval from extended family. And the unique challenge for parents of mixed race children is that neither parent has the same race as the child, so neither can pull from experience of being the child's exact race. And so to think about it in a different way, a dad is able to recall growing up as a boy, and a mom is able to recall growing up as a girl, and so they can apply those experiences to parenting boys and girls respectively, but that's not the case for these interracial marriages because the mixed children are a different race than either parent. And it's very important for parents to be on the same page when it comes to this socialization, because if children are viewing opposing ideas from their parents, then the children will be confused. And so this relates to the idea that solidarity is an integral aspect of co-parenting. And so a unified idea about how to teach the child who he or she is within the context of race would be good not only for the parents, but especially for the child as well. So with socialization comes the racial identity of children. And so now a different article by Daniel Lichter and Zhenqiao Qian is titled Boundary Blurring, Racial Identification Among the Children of Interracial Couples. One surprising fact from this article was that there are many people who are the children of intermarried parents who do not themselves identify as mixed race. And this was difficult for me to comprehend at first, but I had to realize that parents play a role in forming this identification of children, that is through socialization. And so even though race is defined by common characteristics, primarily, in my mind at least, skin color, this surprising fact points to the idea that some people consider race to be a social construct. A lot of times kids will identify as multiple races, and that enables them to serve as a bridge between different races. However, if they're serving as a bridge between two different races, they might not be fully accepted by either of the races of their parents. And so let's talk about some factors that do contribute to this identification. So first, children generally take their father's last name, which is often used by parents and others to assign ethno-racial background to children. So whether the minority in the minority white marriage, which is what this study was looking at, is male or not, can have an impact. And the data supports this finding. So for black-white couples, 17.8% of children are identified as black when the minority spouse is the father, compared to only 10.8% for the minority spouse being the mother. Another factor contributing to identification is that mixed-race minority spouses may have less motivation in identifying their children's race, especially if they have a white spouse. And so again, looking at black-white marriages, if the black parent is mixed black and white, then 29% of children were identified as white, compared to only 8.3% if the minority spouse was monoracial. And this was an interesting one. It's saying if someone is mixed race, then they don't have as much of a connection to a single race, and that's because they have more than one race. Another factor contributing to the identification of the child is the education of the minority parents. So now looking at Asian white marriages, 25% of children are identified as monoracially white when the Asian spouse is poorly educated, compared to only 15% for when the Asian spouse holds some postgraduate degree. So these factors all point to the fact that the status of parents is often unequal and impacts how the children are identified. Returning to this qualitative study by Wang Gill, the author put together some themes from the study. The first theme was that sometimes having children brings new realizations for parents. And this is actually something that we see beyond just race. So a different qualitative study that we studied this year found that many men, by Palkovitz is that author, his book is called Involved Fathering in Men's Adult Development, found that many men do not realize they are selfish until they become fathers and see how selfless they must be. So similarly, the study I was reading said that for many couples, race was a rather intangible construct before having kids, and then upon having children, race became a very important factor to couples, illustrating that their parenting experience was very much connected to an understanding of racial identity. The next theme was that couples found that while exposure to dominant racial identity is automatic, they had to intentionally expose their children to environments that promote minority races. And one way is by choosing a school where children can see themselves in the people and places they have access to. So we've seen this trend in media as a whole, where we're calling for minorities to be represented. So whether it's calling for black princesses or Asian superheroes, we want not only children, but really society as a whole to be able to look up to people who are their role models and see themselves in them, in a sense. The third theme that Langell's study found was that couples describe their interracial marriage as a strength for both themselves and their children, and mixed-race children can serve as symbols of societal progress. They do so by straddling multiple races, and people are forced to look beyond racial categories. It's important to note that couples found that this interracial marriage can be a good thing, because make no mistake, interracial marriage can also lead to conflict, if not handled correctly, not just conflict for the children, as we mentioned with some confusion they might experience, but conflict between parents as they co-parent. Another article I looked at is titled Interracial Couples as Conflict Styles on Educational Issues. This is by Bessie Lawton, Anita Foman, and Mary Braz. And this was really interesting. The first thing the authors reminded us is that not all interracial marriages are the same. You might have a Black, Mexican, Asian, Latino, or white parent with one of any one of those other categories. And so the results from the interracial marriage vary depending on the type of interracial marriage. And so one of the quotes said, for example, 66% of whites would accept Hispanics or Asians, but only 55% would accept a Black person. Among Hispanics and Asians, Blacks were also the least accepted race. The same study indicated that 65% of white Black couples said they had problems when the relationship started, while only 24% of white Asian or white Hispanic couples reported issues. And so that is something to keep in mind, that the actual type of interracial marriage might have a different effect. It's also important to note that interracial couples may deal with conflict in a variety of ways. The study here chose education because it has a strong racial component and is an issue parents feel very passionate about. So first, for some racial considerations, we have to be very, very careful when it comes to making generalizations based on race, the study pointed out, but there are some trends we can look to. So for example, Asian American immigrants set a higher standard for the minimum amount of education acceptable from their children compared to other parents. And some studies report that African American parents see school as one component in the holistic formation of the child, so grades are not as important to them in determining one's value. Though many scholars reject the belief that Black parents have lower standards for academic achievement. White families are less likely than Asian Americans to demand high grades because they live in a society where white people with average grades can be very successful. Conflict styles also play a role in co-parenting of interracial marriages. So there are collectivists and individualists. Collectivists tending to be racialized groups, and they oftentimes avoid conflicts to maintain harmony with others, while individualists tend to be white people in America, and they are usually more dominant to protect themselves. However, this is not always the case, because different studies have shown that African Americans will show both individualist and collectivist tendencies. And in fact, all people really lie on a continuum of conflict styles that changes based on the context of the conflict. And so that's why we're only looking at one conflict here, being education. So this study looks at education and conflict through the cultural contracts theory, which presents three types of contracts that people might have. The first being the ready-to-sign contract. This one, if you have, you resist alteration, you don't want input from your spouse, and it's associated with mothers and Latino and Asian fathers. Then there's the co-created contract associated with African American and white men, where they seem to be more comfortable bending towards the mother's position. And finally, there's the quasi-completed contract, where husbands have learned a little bit to suggest mutually acceptable solutions. And so, as we noted, mothers want control in the realm of education, and this may be related to the belief that parenting is the primary responsibility of the mom. And so maternal gatekeeping is associated with the belief in maternal instinct. I found information about parental gatekeeping in my professor, Eric Olofsson's article, How Co-Parenting Shapes Fathering. Some men have high control too. Many of the Latino and Asian dads in this study were first-generation Americans, so they might have the insecurity of an immigrant who needs to prove his value. On the other hand, despite the stereotypes of African American men, both them and white men have a sense of claim on the United States that eases them a bit and is a factor in their disposition towards a co-created contract. Finally, we should recognize that there's a difference between the dominance of racial social groups and decisions within the family. The family is where one goes for support from challenges of society. And so the difference between parents' attitudes towards education are not necessarily inherently bad, because children are provided with real-life examples of managing differences positively, and they see their parents' full focus on giving them the best lives possible, which a big part for a child feeling loved is seeing that their parents are doing, care about them and are doing whatever it takes. And so to sum up these findings, it's difficult to pin things down to just the race, because the status of a parent, of a father, will say goes a lot beyond race. Just because they have a race might not tell us what their immigrant status or how they feel their identity within America is created. And so we can look at races and generalize a little bit, but also realize that there are some human differences that are hard to quantify. So that ends the literature review of the interracial parenting that was for my project. And now I wanted to talk a little bit about why I chose to investigate this and its applications in my own life. And so I've mentioned before on the podcast that my dad is Filipino and that mom is white. And dad's 100% Filipino, but he was not born there. His parents immigrated here, so dad was born in the country. And then this is probably pretty bad and indicative of some things I'm about to say. I really don't know all of mom's ethnicities. I know there's Hungarian and Irish in there. I want to say perhaps Dutch, but I'm really not sure. I think there's a lot of different things, because I believe Hungarian's the biggest, but I also know Irish is one of the smaller ones. So I'm really not sure. But first things first, when people ask, what are you, where are you from, when I understand that they're asking about my race or ethnicity, which I do kind of know the difference of, people say race is like, I guess my understanding is race is really skin color and maybe other physical attributes, whereas ethnicity is where are you from, or what heritage, culture heritage do you have genetically. And so anyway, my answer has always been I'm half Filipino and half all types of white. And it's interesting though, because that's what I always say. But if I think about how other people think about me, they probably go towards Filipino because that's what I look like, even though it's only half genetically. And yeah, I don't know. I was certainly aware of that from a young age, but I don't know that my parents made the biggest attempts to make my racial identification be a major role in my life, which I don't think is a bad thing either, because I think I was fortunate to grow up in a time where I was celebrated for being Filipino and having some color, but also it was never made a huge deal, I never saw race as a huge deal, again, in what I think is a good way. Yeah. And there's only one time I really think to, at least as a child, where someone might have been, see, I don't even, so okay, it was in, I think like the third or fourth grade, and I went with dad to watch a Cecina Memorial High School football game, and I think as we were leaving, or towards the end, another younger kid came up to me and said, "We don't like your kind here." And what I'm about to say will prove that race was really not running through my head. What I thought in that moment was that that kid was talking about he does not like people who wear leather jackets, because I was wearing a leather jacket at the time. When I grew up a little bit, I thought that might not have been what he was talking about. It might have been he or whoever the we he was talking about didn't like people of color, but that's not, wasn't even something close to what I was thinking about. I'm pretty proud that that is the way my mind works, even as a young kid, because I do think it shows that I don't discriminate negatively or positively based on race, that people are people, and that in a lot of ways, race doesn't define them, doesn't define us, who we are. And again, not to minimize people's races, and I think this is sometimes easier for me to say, being a minority, but yeah, I think that's a good thing. But something from the literature that just didn't make any sense. Well, I guess it does make sense. Yeah, I take that back. And I see what it's saying about some people identifying monoracially, even though they're mixed. But I guess what really didn't make sense was that sometimes it's monoracially white. And, genetics and how that all works and how people look is one thing. But, in general, if you're mixed, you're going to have some sort of color in you, right? Because I'm pretty sure that's just how it works. Unless, you're mixed so much more white than anything else. Which, that is one thing. Yeah, okay, now that I think about it, for some reason, kind of Spanish is what really comes to mind, which is more of an ethnicity than race, I guess. But maybe you could say the same about Latino, maybe, that people have, if they have so much more white heritage than Latino, that they might look a lot more white than Latino, and thus identify as white. Because for someone like me, who's half Filipino and half white, that I look so Filipino that I think if I were to just go around saying, yeah, I'm white, period, people would probably scratch their heads. I'm proud that I've got Filipino and white in me. It's cool. It is, I guess I said it doesn't define who I am. It does. It is a big part of who I am. Literally, I'm a half Filipino, half white man. What I was getting at, though, and I think you probably understand what I was saying, was who I am and what I can do on this earth, I really don't think is limited or influenced all that much about being Filipino and white. It's more so on the choices I make and how I live my life. And I realize that's a fortunate position to be in, and that there have been people and really are still people who don't feel that they can do whatever they want and live however they like due to their skin color. And so, and in that sense, maybe they are defined. And so maybe to revise, maybe what I should be saying, ideally, people should not be defined by their race. And I guess one final thing with why I wanted to look into this. So growing up, even in high school, I remember, in high school, mom pulled up, picking me up from, must have been football or track practice, because I had that every single day. And I think it was football, though. And so I get in the car, and I hear some murmurs. That's Thomas's mom. And out the window, I shout, "Yeah, this is my mom." And everyone's like, "Oh, yeah, okay." And, people are generally not meaning to be rude. And I can understand, a skin tone wise, do not look like mommy. Some people say we've got some more faces, but yeah, I mean, she's blonde with some, I guess, hazel eyes and pretty pale. Love you, mommy. But I'm pretty tan with dark brown, black hair, brown eyes. Yeah, but I do get most of my good looks from her and not dad, I will say. But anyway, yeah, and she talks about one of my sister's friends when they were younger saying that mom adopted the three of us, and she was like, no, I didn't, or maybe not in that tone. I don't know. But part of actually one of the articles that I was reading that I did not include in my more official literature review was a mom talking about this experience and talking about how being a white mother of racialized children was part of her identity, and she was proud of it, and it went along with the breaking down of barriers that I did mention. And that is something that I always felt with mom, that she was so proud that we are her children, that she when, if people would question it, she'd very quickly explain, yep, I'm their mom, they're my kids. And that always made me feel loved, so thank you, mom. And then, I guess I will end things with a comment about dad. Dad certainly educated us, my siblings and me, about the fact that we are Filipino, and tell him about what that means and the importance, and especially Lola and Lolo immigrating over and all that they did, and some connections there. But I think a lot of my beliefs that I was talking about, why I can do anything and I'm not limited by anything racially, also come from him, from both belief in himself that I've seen over the years, but also all that he's explicitly said he believes in me. And yeah, so love both my parents, love who I am. I hope this was kind of a cool, different podcast for you guys, and I will see you next time.